sun. Cause every bit of land is a holy land, and every drop of water is a holy water, and every single child is a son or a daughter of the one earth mama and the one earth papa. So don't tell a man that he can't come here, cause he got brown eyes and a wavy kind of hair. And don't tell a woman that she can't go there, because she prays a little different to a God up there. You say you're a Christian cause God made you. You say you're a Muslim cause God made you. You say you're a Hindu and the next man a Jew. Then we all kill each other cause God told us to. Now, hello, hello.
Hello, hello.
Bonjour, bonjour.
Hello, hello. It's Earth Mom. It's Saturday morning. It's Earth. It's Earth. It's April 1st. Good morning to you. Hey, this morning, we have several guests. We have Jason Slavik of the Liars and Believers Theater Company, Barbara Calvano of B. Calvano Coaching, and Chandra from the Integral Yoga Institute. And it really is a day to wake up, because today is the one-year anniversary of Standing Rock. The first camp started on April 1st, 2016, and the whole movement started with the youth doing a run to Washington, D.C., and the youth saying, hey, why don't we camp to do this, to show our protection for the water? And the camp started with just a few people, just a handful of really steadfast people that were camping up on a hill, and then the rest is history. And although sadly to say that water is flowing underneath the Missouri River through the Dapple pipes, it's hardly the end. Matter of fact, it's really the end of the beginning, because so many people have woken up, and now the movement's grown. Now the water protectors that were there are all over. During this past week, I was just speaking to a water protector buddy who is in New Orleans, and he's working there on the pipeline. Hopefully he'll be on as a guest. But bottom line, it's not over. We're all waking up to come and to stand for Mother Earth as allies with our Native brothers and sisters. And while I was at Standing Rock, Cobblestone, I met him. He's a musician, and he did this really cool song. He used the Jesse Winchester song, put new lyrics on, and he actually just shared a new video that he did, and you can see that. It's on the Earth Mom Facebook page. It's also on BAI's homepage with upcoming programs, which I guess is on through the rest of this day, where you can click on Morning Eclectic, and we have that video there playing for you, and it's a good one to watch. He's got a lot of cool shots on it, and it makes a lot of sense. But right now I'd like to, so Standing Rock's not over. I mean, nothing's over until we're living in harmony with Mother Earth. So it's just all happening, guys. And right now, want to go to my first guest, who is Jason Slavik. Jason is the artistic director and producer and director of the play that I saw last week, Who Would Be King? So we'll go to him now. Here's Jason. My guest is Jason Slavik, artistic director of Liars and Believers, an ensemble theater company based in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and they're here in New York with the play Who Would Be King, conceived and directed by Jason. Welcome, Jason.
Thanks.
Hey. Well, I saw the play last weekend, and I was really impressed. And it is, the more I think about it, at first when we talked after the play, I told you the beginning of it kind of reminded me of the Smurfs, but and not in a derogatory way. I love the Smurfs. They're like really my favorites. But and then I was thinking more today, and the word stretch kept coming to mind. And I'm going to ask you to do me a favor. Would you describe the play? Because I think you'll do it much, much better than I will.
Sure. So it's based on the story of King Saul, which we took from the Bible. But it's not Bible theater. We're using that classic archetypal tale to explore the challenges of leadership in a morally ambiguous time. Fundamentally, it's the story of a man who is an everyday guy who is chosen to be the first king in a really difficult time. And he's sent off without an instruction manual and really without much of a guide and has to find his way. And what's fascinating to me about this story is you have a character who truly does his best, and his best isn't quite good enough. Mm. And I am engaged by that because that feels truly human. And what I think is really great about that story is that his greatness, his nobility is not in whether he succeeds or fails, but how he keeps going forward and brings his best self even in the face of certain failure and certain death. He still picks his head up and keeps moving forward. And that, to me, is a moving, passionate story, and I'm engaged by it. And that's really the story that's at the core of the play. And we tell the story using physical theater on the whole. So we begin with silly clowning, like full-on red nose, goofy clowning, underneath which is a constant political current. So even in the goofiest, silliest moments, we keep tweaking and pointing at politics and at sociopolitics, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then as the play unfolds bit by bit, the physical theater starts to strip away the silliness, the color, the lightness, and by two-thirds of the way through the play, it's transformed into really vigorous pounding back and forth and moving quickly and powerfully through the stage, and it starts then incorporating sword fighting and violence, and then it makes its way to its tragic conclusion.
It really takes you on a ride, and the changes, they move gently, but they're very clear. But it's, you know, it's not a distinct or abrupt change. It's not the end of Act One into Act Two. It just keeps moving cohesively throughout. It's really, and what I was amazed at, and then you told me how the cast have been working together on this for what, 2 years, and constantly refining.
Yeah, we've been working on this piece for 2.5 years. So Liars and Believers is an ensemble theater company, and we create devised theater, which is to say we collaboratively develop the script. It begins with an idea or a story that I bring and pull together the ensemble, and we I then set up I guess exercises and games using all different kinds of improvisation through which we develop the script. And then that ultimately I work with a dramaturg and with the composer, and we edit down into a first draft script. Then we go back together with the ensemble and we attack the script and see what works and what doesn't, and keep refining, and then again more editing, and then we do another iteration and another iteration, and then eventually this show premiered in Boston at the American Repertory Theater's Oberon. Mm-hmm. In November 2015, and then after that we did another round of rewriting and workshops, and then after that it played at the Philly Fringe Festival in September 2016. And then after that, we did a little more rewriting, and now here we are in a fling with Ars Nova.
And what I find so fascinating, too, is that you told me the actors are all the same throughout. The same group has stayed with this play.
Yeah, this has been a great gift. Mm-hmm. This is the ensemble that has been together since day one. So they really, in the beginning, you know, in the beginning, they don't necessarily have parts. I have made some mental notes, and I think I know who's going to play what, roughly. But really, the script isn't made, and many of the parts aren't created yet. And so they're stepping, everyone is stepping in and out of all of the parts as they develop it. And then they start sifting in, and then we start assigning roles, and then they're living in their roles. So these guys have been living in these roles for about a year, year and a half. They really know what they're doing, and it creates, a great opportunity for depth within performance and depth within their relationship on stage.
Yeah, they work together so well. And also as actors, I mean, what you're doing all together is such a gift, because they're really, really building on their craft with those exercises and with everything.
Yeah, I mean, it's a real pleasure for me to, as an artist, to get to work with the same people for a long period of time and get to know them, and then get to know where each of them can grow. So I look for opportunities to challenge them and push them, and we get to rework things more and more deeply. And, you know, now we're already at work on a new show, actually on two new shows. But one of them is really a brand new piece that we're just conceiving. So we took the opportunity for 2 weeks to study Mask together. And we just did a workshop.
Fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great gift when you have people with whom you have a deep relationship and whom you know really well and whose skills you've really nurtured, to then together rely on each other as you step into a new form. It's a great opportunity. And frankly, I think this is a better way to make art. You know, we live in a time right now where economic pressures force the creation of theater, most theater, into these shallow
cookie cutter,
into these shallow pathways where, you know, you're given a script and then a cast comes together, and they have sometimes 2.5-3 weeks to go from not knowing each other to putting up a show. Boom, go. And, you know, that's enough time to learn you're blocking and not hit the furniture, but that's not enough time to find real depth and relationships in the roles and with your partners.
And wow. And even the Mask, working with Mask, we've done it in class, and I've only just scratched the surface with it, but I found it really, really deep. The emotions and things that can come up when you put on a different mask. And as an actor, it kind of opens you right up. I'm just amazed at Mass. So I'd love to see your next production with that. You know, I was looking through your credits, and I also saw that you've done the Cabaret Grin, Sans the Fairies, and that just sounds like such a hoot to me. Did you have like Little Red Riding Hood doing a song in character?
So that was a piece that I devised with the company a number of years ago. It premiered in 2010. We built the show around a series of Grimm's fairy tales. In some ways it's a similar process. You take the material, and then you say, okay guys, how are we going to put this on stage? What would be fun? And you explore, okay, what if there's, so this scene has to be a song, or this scene we're going to do with puppets. And that was ended up being a lot of dance theater. And at the time, I had recently seen and was really into Amanda Palmer and the Dresden Dolls. And there's this whole scene of punk cabaret. That was super influential, and then that became the driving aesthetic of the piece. So it's this, the piece is like a Weimar cabaret set in some like seedy, dark downtown location with tattoos and piercings and this blend of heavy red velvet and black leather and torn, you know, whatever. It's really sexy and dark and fun and funny and sad and beautiful. We had a great time with that piece.
Good. And, you know, speaking of music, in Who Would Be King, your music director, Jan Mobley, he's the composer and also the director, and he did sound design. He is, well, he's another character in the play, essentially, because of the way the music moves it, and he uses voice, and he's on a synth, but he was playing guitar. The way you integrate and the ways he integrated it, it's really kind of amazing. Can you speak to that a bit?
Yeah. Jay was the first, he was the first one on the project. Mm-hmm. We sort of found the voice of the piece together. Mm-hmm. Well, that's unfair. Jay found the voice, and I reflected back to him, really.
Humble.
No, that's not right. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's the way to go.
Collaborated.
And, the style of the piece is called synthwave, which is like electronic music that's really inspired by 80s pop synth sound. Jay's musical experience goes way deeper than that. He's really classically trained. Mm-hmm. But as we were exploring and looking for the voicing of the piece, he wound into this sort of aching one of the influences is Tom York from Radiohead.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of that mixed with some Gregorian chant a little bit, I think, is also an influence of his. And he was in the collaborative process from the beginning. So along with all of the actors, there was Jay, and sometimes he'd be writing a song, or sometimes he would play in response to what's going on.
Yeah.
So the entire piece was developed organically. So his tone also shifts from the sacred to the profane and silly.
Hmm. It's great. You know, I'm curious too. This is different theater. And are there many companies out at this point in time that are doing theater like this, like really taking something and working it and just stretching it to the max and changing it and working together as such an ensemble? Or do you find, well, I guess, yeah, the majority are probably doing a specific play in a specific way. People are writing stuff, even off Broadway. But I was just wondering if you know if there are many companies like Liars and Believers.
Yeah, actually, so there's kind of a whole world of theater that works like this.
Yeah.
In fact, here in New York is one of the centers for it, particularly over in Brooklyn.
Really?
You know, you have companies like, there's a company called Banana Bag and Bodice, who are based in Brooklyn. You have The Team, which is, I don't know if they're in Brooklyn or Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
There are companies that are a little less musical, but have a similar kind of overall approach to theater, like The Civilians. In Austin, there's a company called Rude Mex, as in M-E-C-H-S, not M-E-X.
Mm-hmm.
You have, who else? I was just thinking, like that. There's Sandglass, which is up in Vermont. All of this.
So there's a number.
All of this, I think, derives from, from the same tradition out of which grew, like Bread and Puppet.
Yeah, yeah.
And really, you know, and really, if you draw all that back to, really, it's here in New York in the 60s when they started exploding out what theater meant. Mm. So it's, this is definitely a slice of the theater world that is far from the mainstream, but is really exciting and healthy. And you find companies that each of these companies is unique in their own particular aesthetic. Some are more puppet, some are more acrobatic, some are more physical. Some take unusual approaches to text. You know, there's Elevator Repair Service, which is a company that put on the most recent magnum opus that I saw up in Boston was Gats, where they staged the entirety of The Great Gatsby. So they're all different in their particular aesthetics, but I think this slice of the theater world is tied together with it's tied together by its appreciation for long-term collaborative development. Rather than what we expect.
In and out,
is
yeah.
The typical division of labor that we expect from the theater world is the playwright writes the play, and maybe you have a dramaturg who works with and helps that. And then that gets to the point and that's passed off.
Yeah.
And then that's passed off to a director who directs, and that director works with actors who are hired and come in and work with the words on the page, end of story, you know?
Yeah.
This is a longer, messier, journey to production.
Yeah, it's a ride. And now you're only playing one more night, and I'm sorry I didn't interview you earlier, but Saturday night, April 1st, is your last performance in New York City.
Yep.
Yeah,
we've been here for 3 weeks, and we're in a program that is put together by Ars Nova. It's called a Fling, where they bring in Theater 511, different companies, in a fling with Ars Nova, and they've been great hosts to us, super supportive, and we're very much appreciative of Ars Nova. This is not a production of Ars Nova, and they're not presenting us, but they've been more like hosts to us. And I can't say enough about what a great job they do, what champions Ars Nova, what a champion they are for innovative and new theater. We are at Theater 511 this Saturday at 8 o'clock, and that's at 54th and 10th.
Yep, 511 West 54th. And to get tickets, we can do that through your website, yeah?
Yep, you can either get tickets through our website, which is liarsandbelievers.com/WhoWouldBeKing, or you can get tickets through Ars Nova's website.
Okay, and also through
which
Ovation
I believe is a
tickets.
I believe they're Ars Nova NYC.
Okay, I don't have that. Okay, well, oh wow, Jason Slavik, I thank you so much. You plan to bring something back to the city again pretty soon, or?
Yeah, I hope so. We're looking at the pieces we previously did and seeing what's the future for them. And there are two more that we're in different stages of developing. So we're hoping to be back in New York soon.
Okay, Jason Slavik, Artistic Director of Liars and Believers, and it's playing this Saturday, April 1st, at Who Would Be King, and it's worth seeing. You can go to the website, liarsandbelievers.com/WhoWouldBeKing. Thank you so much.
That's it.
And we're back. My next guest is Barbara Calvano. She is an actor, angel intuitive, and artist. And Barbara is part of a theater festival, a play festival called
the Phoenix Play Festival. And at that festival, she's going to be she's showing her artwork, and she's going to be giving a talk called Doors of Perception. Before that, you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and online, it's WBAI.org. I am Earth Mom, a.k.a. Helena, and this is Morning Eclectic, and here's Barbara Calvano.
My guest is artist and coach Barbara Calvano of B. Calvano Coaching. Barbara is an artist and an intuitive who has worked as a professional actress and studied dance performance, anatomy, and kinesiology and movement therapies at Ohio State University. Barbara is a coach, and she's worked in communication and relationship coaching for the past 30 years. And in our pre-interview, Barbara shared with me that she met her husband through WBAI at one of Gary Knoll's health programs. And Barbara has an upcoming art show at the Rise of the Phoenix Play Festival here in New York, and she's going to tell us about that as well. Welcome, Barbara Calvano.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that beautiful introduction. It's great to be here today.
Thank you. Thank you. So, yeah, I so want to talk to you. Wow. You work as an intuitive. You're guided by angels. You are an artist. I want to talk to you about art and creativity and our journey through life, our walk through life, and hearing our own inner guidance. And want to talk about the art show as well, where you are exhibiting your pieces. Not sure where to begin, but actually I have one quickie question. The medium that you work in as an artist, is it mostly oils or only oils, or do you do mixed media things?
It was oils a lot, and then I actually got allergic to the turpentines, and even though they have new, really great materials for working in oils, I was guided to work in watercolors.
Oh, nice.
So the paintings were done a good 10 years ago, but they were ready to go, and I was guided as they kind of coincided with their Tantra, is the title, and their meditation paintings, and they kind of coincide with what I've been giving talks on recently, which is mostly connecting with the angels to help you live a life of greater ease and grace. So, yes, watercolors are quicker, and I feel like they're better for the environment.
Yeah.
You know, so I kind of moved in that direction.
Cool. Maybe you would explain what Tantra is to all of us.
Sure. You know, my producer thought it was Tantra, which most of us are familiar with, and that has to do with sexuality. And both of them have to do with Kundalini, though.
Mm-hmm.
So this is Tantra with a D, and Tantra is a meditation state resembling a deep sleep state, often accompanied by spiritual visions, precognition, astral travel, and other such supra-normal experiences, or I would just say your psychic abilities, your own intuition. So Tantra is that place between sleeping and waking, and I would describe it as a very deep, relaxed state, like in the morning, before you start getting all worried and anxious about your day. You're in a really beautiful place of receiving messages.
Mm. Yeah, I find the dreams that I have after I've sort of half woken up, and then sometimes if I drift off back, those seem to be a lot of them that come true sometimes, and it just seems to be the most vivid.
Yeah, so that's the title. And for me, because I hadn't been talking about these paintings, but I've been helping people see that by paying attention, being conscious and aware, they are receiving messages at any given time, whether they're religious or not. You know, angels are for all people, regardless of their denomination and spiritual path. So we are receiving messages from other people who are, in a sense, earth angels, and signs on billboards, lyrics in a song, suggestions from people, and then also just feelings in our heart, like we will get a strong connection about something.
Yeah.
Or our mind, precognizance, just declare of being recognizing thoughts as messages, versus thoughts of worry and anxiety, which is more your ego. And so by paying attention to these, instead of just turning them off or basically ignoring or going towards the normal way of listening and responding to the world, which is a particular, like a style. I'm going to say a style. It just reminds me of my title of my show, my talk, is Doors of Perception,
mm-hmm.
Angels and Art. So any door, I would call a door, opening a door, is like responding to something. So if someone told you, take this course, and you'd like initially say, well, I don't know if I'm that type of person that wants to sit in a room with a bunch of strangers, but what if that door was your door to something way, way more than you could ever comprehend? And so many doors are presented to us, but based on our background, our personality, our habits, we don't always walk through the door. We kind of judge, you know, we judge. And we let fear stop us. So even for the doors of creativity, I think artists are used to, I want to say jumping. Like we see something, we go with it. If you're painting, you choose a color, you go with it.
Yeah.
You choose another, another.
Yeah.
If you're composing music, you just play more. The artist personality tends to play, be more playful. And then another type of personality would be a little more rigid, like, well, I need to follow this certain decorum, a certain behavior style, because it fits my family, it fits mm-hmm. my college degree, you know, it fits my profession, instead of just being more childlike, you know, which is kind of, that is like the angels. The angels are timeless in their age, but the angels' message is pure love and vibration, creativity. Creativity is our natural way of being, but we stop doing it because of, I have to earn a living, so I'm not going to do my art anymore. Or, you know, I need to do this and be serious. And even I've done that. And in this particular time in my life, I had been doing the angel coaching, you know, doing the card readings with life coaching, but they really pushed me. I'm going to say the angel said, do it. Show your art, even though I haven't been doing that a lot in the past 5 years, even 10 years. I've been doing mostly photography. They said, show your art. Talk about your art. Talk about how the angels affect you.
How did that come to you? Just like through a feeling inside? I mean, I really believe the heart knows. But sometimes getting to that place where the heart knows and getting away from all the fears and all the crap that we put on and all the mind stuff. It's like sometimes that's a trip in itself. How did you get to that place of knowing? And was it a feeling? Was it a dream? What was it?
For me, it was a feeling. Mm. I'm a clairsentient. You know, there's like four or five different types
the
of clairs. I felt it in my heart.
Yeah.
I've been working really seriously hard on opening my psychic abilities, and one of the ways I've been doing that, and I also teach my clients, is through yoga. It doesn't have to be hard yoga. I like Bikram yoga. I like the hard yoga right now.
They're
guiding me to a more gentle yoga, but because I was a dancer and athlete before, I kind of like the challenge. But something that is a little challenging for you is going to help your focus.
Yeah.
So the yoga helps you focus. And then when emotions come up while you're doing the breathing and stretching, you can release them. So the way to become better at listening, and for me it was like my heart. I just felt it in my heart.
Mm-hmm.
So it was so clear that it was, I'm going to say safe. I'm going to be guided. That's the other thing. When you follow your guidance from the angels, divine and ascended masters, light beings, they're going to be there to show you the way. I mean, they literally, it's a new way of doing life, which I'll be honest, it took me many years to get to. I'm 63, and I'm going to say, for the most part, I knew how to be a like type A, triple A personality, right?
Triple
get
A.
Things done, right?
Yeah.
The New York way, right?
Yeah.
But it costs you your health after a while. There's a lot of stress in that.
Yeah.
So working with the angels have helped me to trust more. Even I think doing the yoga more has helped me to trust, let go, and not think so much. And like you said, I heard it from my heart versus my head.
Yeah.
And some people hear words, like I'm speaking to you, for me, it was in my heart, like now's the time, like a breath like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's an easiness. But taking care of your body in terms of detoxing as you are guided, like if you're guided right now to get off of a lot of caffeine or alcohol or recreational drugs, that'll clear your aura.
Yeah.
I have found for myself, my clients, that they can receive better when they're not, when they don't have a lot of stuff that's not natural in their system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the number one way. And then here we live in New York City, to get into nature as much as possible. So almost every Sunday I go to the gardens, the Bronx Botanical Gardens, and I'm photographing flowers, I'm walking to the forest. Anytime you can be near nature, that'll detox you and pull out any stress. And then there's something called shielding and clearing with angel therapy techniques, and basic shielding, so that you're not absorbing millions of people's energy, you know, on any given day here.
Yeah, New York.
So those little practices kind of prepare your vessel, your body, to listen easier.
Yeah. New York City is a rough place to be an empath. I mean, you know, get on the subway and just walking down the street, it's like, whoa.
Boy, yeah, but it's as I had heard years ago, it's the express pass, express lane to spiritual growth, because you have to. You have to grow. Otherwise, I mean, I don't know if you listen to my you know, how you met me listening to my show.
Yeah.
I've shared often I'm a recovered alcoholic. So 26 years ago, I gave up alcohol, and I was guided to, and that changed my life enormously. From instead of having a glass of wine, just being with the feelings, being with the rainbow spectrum of emotions that are available versus only choosing the good ones, right?
Yeah.
So I learned to really be with all of the lower energies that, you know, sometimes they are uncomfortable for us. But by doing so, I opened another door. I went through a door that allowed me to be more comfortable in my body, which is what we exist in, and therefore be more comfortable with people.
Well, being a dancer, you were probably always pretty comfortable in your body and somewhat grounded, yeah?
Yeah, that was my natural tendency, though interesting enough, I had wanted to be a medical doctor, but I grew up kind of poor. I mean, we had a roof over our head. We had, you know, food.
Yeah.
But when I saw that the struggle to get there to be a doctor was just too hard, I just went for whatever came my way, literally. And I had gotten an art scholarship, but I said, you know, I've been doing art all my life, mostly to survive. We would move every 2 years. My dad was in the Air Force, so I could always draw. So that was my way to make friends. I could just draw and paint.
Yeah.
And so the dance, I discovered modern dance in college, mm-hmm. and that was, for me, a real, real introvert, a real, really shy person that allowed me, it opened the door for me to express myself. I was totally shy.
I totally get it. I totally get it. I didn't stick with it long enough, but I studied dance for a while in college. And it really just changed things. I was studying like ballet and jazz. Forget tap. I couldn't tap to save my life. And I got rhythm, but never tapping. But it's just amazing how it affects you, and the high you get from it. And I got to admit, like doing ballet and being at the bar, you know how you want to get to a place without all the yamma yamma in the mind. And it's better than meditation, because that's the only one of the few times I find in my mind where I'm not making a list and thinking of this and that.
Yeah.
Because you just have to stay focused. And I was just reading a book by one of our hosts here, David Rothenberg, and he was talking about how when he plays basketball, that's when he's totally centered and focused and the other thoughts aren't running around. And those times are really, really good, you know?
Yes. I really feel that being guided for me to do modern dance just really saved my life. And, you know, did I make a living out of it? No. But do I still use it every single day of my life? Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely. And, you know, if people feel that they can't dance, a basic yoga class gets them in touch with their breath. You know, just breath is what it's about, and breathing and stretching. But the music and dance class just really helps us just, you know, go into meditation.
Yeah.
You know, we're transported.
Yes.
You know, and you feel good, and then your body feels good, and that conveys into all parts of your life.
Yeah.
You know.
And it's interesting, the twists and turns that our lives take, and something that seems horrendous, then, I don't know, as you go on, there's reason for that. Oh, there's a reason for this, and you learned from this, and you learned from that. And, you know, some of the stuff we've been through seems like it was pretty hard, and, you know, some of it's been easy and wonderful. Can you speak to that some about,
sure.
you know, kind of weaving
sure.
the way through our lives, our individual lives, and then
collective? Well, one of the things that I've come to conclude with some of my teachers, it's my truth,
mm-hmm.
so not be for all, but that we chose our particular path, we chose our parents, we even
mm-hmm.
chose our family situation to best learn the lessons we need for this life, and
yeah.
specifically for those who may feel that this is their last incarnation. So what would that mean? We might have a really not great childhood. We may have gone through, which I went through, some abuse,
mm-hmm.
emotional abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, here I went to 13 schools before I graduated from high school. And just then, and some of the stuff I'll talk about at my angel talk, getting into drugs and alcohol, which I didn't expect to do, right?
Yeah,
it just seemed
sure.
to come along.
You weren't aspiring to that. Yeah.
Kind of like going back and forth to, like, I'm so sensitive. How do I handle being so sensitive in the world? And then finding out it was all part of the plan.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the fact that I listened to my messages, which said, go to this person who will help you with your marriage. I had just gotten married, and then I got severely depressed. I wanted to die. I literally thought about dying. And I said, I don't think this is good. You know, so I found a therapist, and she directed me to AA, which I wasn't drinking every day, but I had all the personality traits of someone who was kind of conditioned to be depressed
mm-hmm.
when things didn't go right.
Yeah.
And so I found out for me that by honoring her wisdom, and I followed the path to the church basements, I discovered a completely new connection to being in the world, which was I didn't have to be perfect anymore. I didn't have to be perfect.
Yeah,
right.
That's a big one. I'm enough. Hello. Yeah.
Yeah. And then just being, as they say, finding your ordinariness in you had me discover my true extraordinariness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't about, because even the straight A's, and getting this thin, you know, like really dancer thin and having the
mm-hmm.
perfect body didn't make me happy.
Mm.
You know? And even finding the great husband didn't make me happy.
Wow.
You know? It's like I had to find it within myself.
Yeah,
so those were doors along the way.
Wow.
And then thank goodness I always made art. That was kind of my expression of, you know, some people write. Well, I just would do self-portraits. I did a lot of paintings of my body, my own body, self-portraits in the
mm-hmm.
nude, even just looking at figure drawings, just really facing my own, I'm not going to say mortality, but my physicality,
yeah.
my physical
yeah.
existence. And then I did paintings of my mother and myself and my father and myself, you know, bringing up so much emotion that I could heal,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I just followed, you know, it wasn't a voice. It was just like in my heart mostly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do this. Just do this. And these were, I would do paintings 72 by 72 inches of family members.
Whoa.
And just, it was just like a catharsis. Heal things without talking to a therapist. It was just, I knew there was greatness in my family, though a lot of what I was carrying in my body was upset, sadness, and anger. But I was able to make something beautiful and allow me to find my way back.
Okay, so Barbara, before we run out of time, let's let everybody know about the event, when it is, how they can get there, how they can get tickets, and everything.
Very good. It's part of the Spotlight on Festivals, Rise of the Phoenix. My talk is on April 23rd
mm-hmm.
on Sunday at 12 noon. And it's called Doors of Perception, Angels and Art. You can get tickets at the OvationTix.com, or you can call 866-811-4111. And it's part of a 2-week festival that starts the 17th through the 30th. There's an opening party that I'll be at with my art, some music, and hors d'oeuvres, and food, and drinks, and that's on the 17th. And all that information can be found at my website, which is bcalvanocoaching.com.
Oh, excellent. Okay. Thank you so much for being my guest, Barbara Calvano.
Thank you for letting me. Thank you for listening to my show, and maybe you'll be a guest on my show soon.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Open your heart. Let the light of the world shine through you. The greatest of joy is to see you in me, and me in you. Be bold, be free, be beautiful. Believe, be loved, be true to you. As far and wide, remember there's someone who's thinking of you. We're all thinking of you. Be bold, be free, be beautiful. Believe, be loved, be true to you. As far as
that is the music of David Newman, Durga Das, and our next guest, Chandra from Integral Yoga, is going to tell us about a concert with him this evening at Integral Yoga, and you're going to tell us about what's coming up at Integral. Good morning, Chandra. Thank you for getting up with me.
Good morning. Good morning to all the WBAI listeners. Thank you for having me.
Uh-huh. So, you've got a big concert coming up tonight, yeah?
Tonight, yes, yes. For anybody who enjoyed that music, anyone who's feeling blue about all the rain or anything else, come and chant with us tonight at Integral Yoga at a concert with David Newman, also known as Durga Das, one of our very favorites. He chants, he performs kirtan, the ancient art of call and response. So not only do you get to listen to his really beautiful music, you get to sing as well along with him. And it's a beautiful, uplifting concert that he brings to us. It's tonight at 8 o'clock at Integral Yoga. And he will also be doing tomorrow a workshop. So the concert tonight is called Sing for Love. Tomorrow afternoon from 2:30 to 4:30, Awakening Through Love, Devotional Kirtan, and Practical Guidance to Open Your Heart. So it's just positive and beautiful. And then for all the kids in your life, he's doing family yoga tomorrow, a kids kirtan. And there is nothing cuter than watching all these children sing and have such joy as they do that. So that's from 11 to 1 tomorrow. So we've got these three events. Sing for Love tonight at 8, Family Yoga, Kids Kirtan tomorrow from 11 to 1, and then Awakening Through Love workshop from 2:30 to 4:30 tomorrow.
Oh, that's wonderful. Oh, my God, the Kids Kirtan must be a hoot. They probably have a ball.
They have a ball. First, they do a little yoga. Of course, they come with their caregiver, a parent or caregiver, and they do a little bit of yoga with our wonderful Integral Yoga for Kids teacher, Lakshmi Paidel, and then they'll have a kids kirtan with Durga Das, and that's part of our whole Integral Yoga for Kids program.
For the concert? So, I'm sorry.
No, we just have yoga for everyone. That's what I want everyone to know.
Oh, you sure do. Lots of it. For the concert tonight, can people just show up at the door, or do they need to call in advance or anything like that?
Well, it's a good idea because space is limited. It's filling up. And so calling 212-929-0585 or going on our website, iyiny.org. It's a good idea to get the tickets in advance. I can't be sure there'll be any left by tonight.
Yeah, you guys sell out a lot of your events, which is wonderful because you do such good work.
Thank you.
You're over there on 13th between 7th and 8th, and it always feels like home going there. It's always so welcoming at the Institute, the Yoga Center, and at the store. I just love you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. What else is going on in the 3 minutes and a half that we have left?
Well, let's see. We have over 100 yoga classes every week, and that certainly invites people from prenatal to every age. We have students in their 80s who still come to us, who've been coming to Integral Yoga forever, and it's never too late to begin. Anyone can stretch and breathe and meditate, and our classes are very, very friendly to everyone. And so I urge people, if you think that you can't do yoga, come to us, because we'll show you that you can. So we've got a lot of that. We've got also, for all of the heroic teachers of special needs children out there, and anyone who works with special needs children, from occupational therapists to physical therapists to parents of these special children, we have Yoga for the Special Child training starting next Saturday. It's a beautiful program with a woman who takes this all over the world, teaching people to work with and love and bring out the very best in these children. So you can find out about that on our website as well.
IYINY.org. That's awesome, Chandra. That really is. Wow.
Yeah, we do our best to really serve the community. I just read in the paper today about that service is really the most healing and wonderful practice. If you're feeling a little lost or you're not sure what to do about the world, go volunteer somewhere. Do something that you believe in. And that's what we do. You know, all of our classes are taught by volunteer teachers. They consider it an offering and a privilege, indeed, to teach at Integral Yoga Institute.
And they really do it with love and care, I got to admit.
That's what we're all about, and that's why we're so happy to have events about, you know, Sing for Love and Awaken to Love and Show Love for the Kids. It's what it's all about. It's what heals the world.
You know, did you have, there's the yoga, I forget her name, I think her last name begins with a P, the yoga teacher who is in her 90s, was she there already?
Well, actually, thanks for mentioning that, Tao Porsham Lynch. She is 98 years old. She's amazing. I'm sure people have seen her on TV recently, and yes, she's coming on May 6th on Saturday.
Gosh, I want to see her.
well, I'll tell you what. Yeah. I took her class once.
Uh-huh.
It's pretty challenging. She's really quite a yoga teacher, and she's amazing to be around. Talk about positive energy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's on Saturday, May 6th, and that frequently sells out. So anyone interested in that, I would encourage you to pre-register.
We've got 1 minute, but can you just talk about her for like 30 seconds?
Well, yes, she has been teaching her whole life. She knew personally Master Gandhi. Some of the earlier yoga masters. She does ballroom dancing when she's not teaching. She teaches 8 yoga classes a week. And she has written a book that we will have in the Integral Yoga Shop. She's a beautiful woman, so positive, so present. And she does a gorgeous yoga class, and it's just worth it to be in her presence.
Yeah, absolutely. Her body's beautiful, and she's just beautiful inside and out. But, yeah, she's gorgeous. Oh.
Yeah. So that there are many, many, many ways to access Integral Yoga. We have free open meditation 10 times a week.
What time is that?
Monday through Saturday at 12:15 and Monday through Thursday at 6 p.m. You just come in and say, I'd like to go to meditation.
Mm-hmm.
Our prices are among the lowest in town, and that makes it accessible to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of accessible, we will be hosting May 19th to 21st the Accessible Yoga Conference, which is all about bringing yoga to everyone, to underserved populations, to people facing physical challenges, to people, again, who don't feel that they can do yoga. This is all about including everyone. There's information about that on our website. We're hosting it at Integral Yoga at the Church of the Village on the corner of 7th Avenue and 13th Street.
All right.
And at the LGBT Center across the street from us on 13th Street. It should be an amazing weekend.
Thank you, Chandra. IYINY.org. Chandra, Integral Yoga is wonderful, and a lot of that has to do with you. And I got to say, see you later for now. But
okay.
Thank
you. See you later.
Yes.
Everybody have a wonderful day. Take a nice deep breath.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank
all
you.
Right. Thanks again.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. So appreciate it. You have an awesome week. Thank you, Reggie Johnson, for the pre-record. Thank you, Sean Rhodes, for flawless engineering all the time. And thank you to my guest, Barbara Calvano, Jason Slavik, and Chandra Integral Yoga. Lots going on there. Really have an awesome week. Be well. Later.